Hello and welcome to Further Research Needed. Today we're going to talk about why did alchemy die? As always, I'm joined by my two lovely co-hosts.
Jan-Philipp Reising.
And Hannes Weyrer.
Brilliant. Well, first, before we get into this, I have a seasonally appropriate beer. Oh, shit. Oh, no.
Okay, now he's running for beer. I do have tea, which is definitely also seasonally appropriate, I think.
Anyway, mine's a... pumpkin flavored beer.
Is it some kind of alchemical product or how come it's particularly appropriate for this podcast?
It literally, well, no, it's because it's October while we're recording. Mm. So it's figured. My pumpkin spice latte beer equivalent.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, everyone. Okay. So why did, oh gosh. Oh, that really tastes pumpkin-y. Anyway, why did alchemy die? I think we need to start with what is alchemy? Mm-hmm. So I'd like to hear what you think alchemy is, or your impressions of the alchemical societies and history of alchemy.
Mm. Do you want to go first, Hannes?
I've read a bit about the history of chemistry, so maybe...
Oh, I go first because I'm the least... I can be the idiot.
There's no wrong answer.
Okay. So I would say alchemy is a combination of different things, but generally speaking, it was a group, or alchemists were a group of people who tried to understand the world and very specific questions about it. So it's like on the intersection of magic and, or magical thinking and science, like a proto-science in a way. And there were a couple of like standard questions that they were asking. For example, the philosopher's stone, the idea that you could turn lead into gold. And there were like a certain set of questions that they were working on. But to me, it feels like a proto-chemistry kind of thing mixed with the occult to some degree. Yeah, I think that's the best description I could give.
Mm. Oh, I like that. It's good. Hannes, do you want to jump in?
What Philip said sounds pretty good to me. I think, especially the word proto-science, I guess there's a formal definition of what a proto-science is, or maybe not, because I think there are also so many definitions of what science is, but regardless of that, I think proto-science is a good description, because then as much from what I understood, chemistry as a science emerged from it. And maybe that's where I would disagree with what Philip said. I don't think the main point of alchemy was to understand things, but to do things, which is the transformation of matter, which they try to achieve. And in the end, that's what chemistry is today. It's the science of the transformation of matter, how we turn one substance into another substance, and the physical laws that dictate how we do this and what we can do and what matter is and how it behaves in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. I sort of feel like that might be a bit too restrictive, but I think we're going to get into that. So it will be interesting at the end of the podcast if we agree on sort of like a broader or more narrow definition of alchemy.
Sorry, what I was defining now was chemistry, I think, modern chemistry. And I think this was the scientific child of alchemy. I think the people who try to understand matter properly then invented chemistry. Hmm. And I think they were less focused on turning lead into gold and finding the philosopher's stone. Speaking of which, what's the philosopher's stone good for again?
Eternal life.
It's like
eternal life. Oh, yeah.
And lead into gold. It gets both.
It's like a recipe component in a lot of other things. Like to achieve X, Y, you take a philosopher's stone and then you do something with it.
I do have one anecdote that I think describes the transition from alchemy to chemistry quite well. I don't know if you were
I want to have Chris's like default, like the proper definition for the episode first.
Okay.
We were just guessing.
Okay, I'm gonna keep that one on hold.
So I'm going to sit on the fence here. This is brilliant. I really like the term proto-science. Philip, you maybe gave alchemists a bit too much credit with the understanding comment. I think I would agree with Hannes on that, that the aims were very specific in one sense. They were really to turn lead into gold, that this was the overarching aim, and that they were trying to develop rules by which they could understand, or lore or alchemical knowledge, which they were trying to build up into. And they were constantly searching for the philosopher's stone, or the way to do the two aims. But it wasn't in the sense of trying to understand the universe as a whole, in the same in the sense of the scientific ideal, that there's a series of natural laws that govern everything that we do.
Goal-oriented in a sense.
Much more goal-oriented, definitely. And this sort of transmutation is it. The thing is, it is a proto-chemistry. It's all about changing things into things. So living into non-living is a big one. So eternal life comes from this idea. Like
Into non-living is easy. The other way around would be hard.
That is true. Sorry. Yes. Non-living into living, and these things. So they were observing the world around them through a lens of Greek philosophy, Iranian and Middle Eastern texts that had moved just into Europe at the time, and they were trying to, with a cover of a religious reading of the world, that sort of 4,000-year-old Earth, the Bible. So they took the Bible to be the underpinning of all these things. So you often see a lot of references to Solomon and Solomon's temple as to be reasons why you are aiming. So Solomon was apparently supposed to have the philosopher's stone and turn gold, base metals into gold, and could live forever. And the idea in alchemy was that this knowledge had been lost during humanity's fall and over the preceding decades and centuries or whatever. And then they were trying to rediscover previously known knowledge that allowed us to live forever and make loads of gold. How do you feel about alchemy? Do you think it's a complete, a sort of cul-de-sac, a wrong road down which humanity went down for a long time? I mean, I'd like to say one of the finest scientists ever, Isaac Newton, wasted about half of his scientific career trying to find the philosopher's stone. Like he did a lot, but he spent a long time poisoning himself with mercury. And there is a theory that he died because of mercury poisoning, because of his alchemical work. So you could see that as a loss to our world. If he'd stayed looking into physics and stayed maybe more on the scientific path, would that have been a loss? So for you two, do you think alchemy was a waste of our time?
I don't think it was it's hard to tell. Like even with our definition, it's sort of like fuzzy and it's hard to like really nail it down. But I do think there's something to be said about pursuing a wrong road and kind of like collecting information that then gives birth to something that's more specific. Like you need to accumulate a bit before you trim down and all the branches that don't make sense. Like you have this, like, let's say cultural brainstorming almost. That's what alchemy feels like. And then you say, okay, all of this is bullshit, but we're going to keep these sections. Those were actually solid. So I would say, overall, it was useful, but it's also a very interesting period in a science in the broadest sense, because it was this mixture of like religion and occult and metaphors and that kind of stuff, since it was forbidden or not kind of like sanctioned by society as a whole. Like a lot of the texts we read nowadays don't make any sense, but if you know what they code for, then it's a lot more sciencey. So you have like this, like it's almost folklore at this point, you know, like, but so it's hard to kind of like tease apart what they actually meant. Like the people who are actually doing it were they scientists? Yeah. And they just used language that sort of coded, or were they just crackpots who believed in like angels and deities and whatever? It's so hard to tell. But I think it was like a useful, I don't know if it was necessary, but I think it was useful overall.
Interesting. I will not say anything yet. Hannes?
I do think the core motivations seem to be greed and power. And I think that kind of puts the entire endeavor a bit into question. But I do think Philip is right that even out of such kind of, I want to say, wrong motivations, or let's not the most generous motivations, something good or something useful or something that described the universe quite well and then did give us a lot of tools in our modern society. I think some of this came out. Now, the conceptual question or the problem I have is I'm not sure to what extent alchemy also covers the ancient Greek or maybe Aristotelian view on nature and matter, where we had the four elements, fire, water, earth, and air, wind, which all other matter was divided in, or I think then eventually this was developed and different matter, states of matter, which they called element, were given different properties based on these four elements and so on. Is this part of alchemy, or was this more of a natural philosophy that was more scientific, more of a proto-science that then led to phlogiston theory and the periodic table of the elements later?
So I have consulted with the massive hive mind of Wikipedia, and apparently the Aristotelian four element philosophy is a very large underpinning of alchemy. Mm-hmm. But if we look at around the same time as the Enlightenment and Francis Bacon and the sort of beginnings of scientific theory, the four element hypothesis was still strongly used across the board. It was not that they were the alchemists were radical for picking that area. It will be a long time, and alchemy will have to die before we get to a more considered elemental periodic table of elements kind of style formation of chemistry.
I do think it reminds a bit of the Greek philosophy and Aristotelian physics, which I think it had a bit of a similar idea of four causes, which every thing in the end could be divided in, or everything could have four causes. And only then in the scientific revolution with Newton and so on, we started having a different idea of what physics is. And maybe the same goes a bit for the four elements that date back to the Greeks and then were changed in the scientific revolution or developed to other ways of seeing elements. And maybe alchemy was just the at least from, if you now ask me for my opinion, I think alchemy was the weird, I don't know, a very human aspect of it, that people wanted to do something with it. And what's more humble than like eternal life and being able to generate riches, regarding inflation, right? Disregarding inflation.
So, and would you say that instead of a proto-science, you see it as a pseudoscience? Like there are these like proto-science ideas. So alchemy is the pseudoscience version of that.
That is what I'm saying.
Oh, interesting.
So it's really nice the topics you've covered looking into alchemy, because it arrives at a time when all theories are vaguely equally valid, especially if they have linking to previous knowledge. So if you can tie it back to the ancient texts, people consider that to be a worthy form of knowledge at the time. And this experimentalism is only just being created now. So there's two big themes of the scientific or of the Enlightenment. You have mathematical proof and you have experimental proof, and these two things are beginning to emerge at the same time, and alchemy is kind of trapped because it uses so much of the kind of mysticism that surrounds old ancient wisdom to justify itself.
A proof may be what I'm claiming is true because it's kind of written in this old text, or because this old text kind of supports this line of thinking.
Yeah. A lot of alchemical information is more, instead of that I discovered this, because of course I'm a charlatan, but I have found a book from Solomon's temple that tells me how to transmute matter. And that's the knowledge, and the perceived kudos comes from the ancient text that I interpret to give you the new cure for something, or these sorts of things. And these practitioners of alchemy, it was a secret society. So it had adherents who spoke in code, who actually managed to worm their way up to the very top of society. So they were informing kings. I know in the sort of the history of England, the English kings, a lot of them were hinted at being practitioners of alchemy, or certainly funding a lot of this, even at the same time that they started the Royal Society, the Scientific Enlightenment Society. They were at the same time funneling much more money into some alchemical secret societies and trying to find the elixir of life and this sort of thing. Because of course, who wouldn't? You're a king. You can give money to anyone. Who wouldn't want unlimited gold and these sorts of things?
And then hindsight is 2020, right? Like now we say, oh, this was alchemy, this was science. But if you're living in that process, I don't think the lines are as clear cut. Yep. So in that sense, if you're a scientist, you always had to get your funding somewhere, right? Like your experiments are extremely expensive, or like you need stuff that's hard to get by, and you also can't do like a normal job. So you need to find someone who funds you. And that's true for alchemists as well as for scientists, right? You need to have a benefactor or be like insanely rich yourself. So I don't think we can necessarily blame them for like finding influential people and finding a benefactor to do that. I mean, they were doing experiments, right? So that was a huge thing in alchemy, that you were like doing stuff, which is sort of a novel concept.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree. So I'm going to put you guys on the spot for possibly the last time now. So given that we're in 1600, 1666, okay, you've got alchemy, you've got the scientific societies, or the natural science, natural philosophy, as it was called at the time. Both the rich and powerful were interested in and were funding at the time. So why has alchemy withered away? And why did the proto-sciences that moved into the sciences begin to flourish and stay the test of time?
You want to take that one, Hannes?
I have a few thoughts, but I'm very much not confident any of them is the right answer.
I just go for it. For
one me, one thought same. Is, isn't wasn't there a 1666? Wasn't there supposed to be some great apocalypse or something? And was there some cult who thought they read the Bible the right way, and that's when God's, what was it called, kingdom is gonna come to earth and all that? But I don't think that's related to alchemy, though. Or maybe it is, we'll see. And the other thing, okay, but to actually answer your question, what do I think might have been the reason? Well, I guess intuitively I would say turned into a science, into chemistry. And the way I'm thinking about this is the discovery of elements that taken apart, the deconstructing the theory of four elements of water, fire, earth, and wind, and finding more elementary elements, the one that we have in our periodic table today, at least some of them initially. I think the first one that was found, that was the anecdote I wanted to tell earlier, was phosphorus, I think. And I think maybe I've told this before, the guy who founded was, I think his name was called Brenner, I think it was German. which ironically means burner. And he was looking for gold in a somewhat golden fluid, urine. So he boiled the shit out of a lot of urine trying to get gold or to find the golden substance in there. And what he found was, after boiling and boiling and burning a lot of urine, starting off with his own, and then he started collecting the entire village's urine. And what he found was a white substance that was burning, which was phosphorus then. And this kind of broke this theory, because technically everything in urine, which is a liquid, is a water-like substance, should be opposed to fire. So it should not be burning. That was the characteristic any fluid, any liquid had at the time. So I think that was kind of the first thing that showed everyone who has taken, like, I want to say, natural philosophy a bit more seriously and try to understand their way through alchemy, that these theory of four elements could not be as true as they thought. This was the first indication, this is not the way things are. And yeah, I think I would intuitively say that this kind of then snowballed into a more accurate understanding of matter, of transformation of matter, and therefore alchemy dies. But I do have a feeling that's not what you're getting at.
No, interesting.
Okay, I have, like, history is by far my worst subject. I have the least amount of knowledge, but I'm going to put forward a couple of hypotheses, and maybe with a bit of luck, I might be close enough. So my first hypothesis would be close to Hannes' hypothesis, that best case, you have two competing systems, and one of them is science, which makes predictions that are quite accurate if you do good science, and one system that's based on occult and mystical thinking, which makes poor decisions or poorer decisions, maybe not even poor, but just worse decisions. So over time, science just wins out because it makes better predictions. So I hope that's the case, but I haven't, just as Hannes, I have a feeling that this is unfortunately not how history worked out. The second one is, I think it, what if it's something about the church? Like the church had a mandate, or like something happened in the church, new pope, and pope was like, nope, alchemy is bad, we're going to ban all of it, and that's why it died. Shoot, I had a third idea. I think I forgot. It died because, I don't know, there was a scandal. A very famous alchemist was like, I don't know, he slept with the king's wife or something. It was like a huge scandal, and after that the whole field of alchemy just broke down because of this like super public scandal.
I love this. Can we turn this podcast into the Hello magazine of ancient scandals, where we just dig up the past and be like, and do you know what they did? They were sleeping with this person, and then this happened, and then...
Okay, those are my three tries. Enlighten us, Chris.
Okay, I would like to say that none of this, so I think a lot of what you've said, and all of what you've said, is also true. It didn't die because of one particular thing, but I was recently reading about alchemy, and this hypothesis as to why it died really took my imagination, or caught my imagination, because I hadn't thought of it like that. But alchemy itself is intrinsically flawed in one sense because of the main aims, which both of you have talked about. It wanted, as opposed to some kind of very floaty aim of understanding or something like this, it specifically wanted to make gold, and it specifically wanted people to live forever. And maybe not so much for the living forever, although there can be reasons why you'd want to do that. The making gold from base metals thing requires a level of secrecy in it, because if you know how to make gold, you're a millionaire. If everyone knows how to make gold, no one's a millionaire, because it's worthless base metal that you've just turned a load of stuff into. So alchemy itself intrinsically created a secrecy and a... Philip, you talked about it before, that you said you weren't sure whether the texts that have been found on alchemy were some crazy guy like thinking that dragons created this egg material that they then used the egg material to grind up and whatever, or that they it was just a mistranslation from earlier words for things. But alchemists went out of their way to make their texts not understandable to other readers because they necessarily needed to hide their theories and their planning and their rituals, because if they ever did discover the Philosopher's Stone, they needed to keep it secret from other people. So I think the thing I hadn't really appreciated was that the scientific or the Enlightenment revolution, which was mathematical techniques existed from the Greeks, but the experimental techniques and the experimentalism and probing the natural world through experiment was an invention of the Enlightenment. But the other was the sharing of knowledge and the exchange of knowledge through these new societies and with using the printed word, so using journals, international in the terms of Europe, to send discoveries around for other peoples to critique and then come back and say, what you said is wrong, I found a different way. And so at the time when Newton's ideas the mathematical ideas are being exchanged and critiqued, and you have a lot of back and forth about those sorts of things, the alchemical ideas were not being. And it's only when people started taking chemical ideas and alchemical ideas and exchanging information, and you see the birth of protochemistry, do we actually see the building of a robust knowledge base that goes on to continue to exist. So this is the big reveal. This is the whole thing. Hannes, you look like you're pensive, I would say.
Yeah, no, I think this is super interesting. Alchemy died because it had an intrinsic necessity to stay secret. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise the goal could have not benefited its creators.
Yep.
Other than science, which can only, not sure if that's correct, can only work if the word is being spread.
Yep. That was the hypothesis I wanted to share with you. That's the whole
That is interesting. I would have never got that. But it was all there. We laid it all out there, but it was that's cool.
I have two questions. The first one is the idea in that hypothesis that between these two competing models, the moment science figured out information exchange and proofreading, it supercharged science that as a competing model, it just like took the prize. It's like running and a guy invents the motorcycle. And after that, obviously science is the sole competing model. Or is it that sort of alchemy tried the same thing and alchemy just doesn't work? Like kind of like blew apart in that area of information sharing. The moment you start sharing, it kind of just falls apart.
My understanding is this is the latter, because and the great example of this is Newton, right? He at the time there was no tension between being the greatest natural philosopher at the time and also being potentially, we don't know because no one had a ranking of the greatest alchemists at the time, but he was also an alchemist at the time. So he spent his time equally, or actually spent a lot more time towards his end being an alchemist. But because that information wasn't shared, we have no idea. And he did a lot of work. His books still exist with some of what he wrote down in them. But that information wasn't shared as much. So I think we can't see them as consciously competing at the time. They existed hand in hand. They were equally valid hypotheses of how the world was operating at the time. Mm. It just so happened that the scientific theory stood the test of time, whereas alchemy died out. And I would argue that one of the reasons it died out was because of this lack of information exchange.
Mm. There's one thing I'd like to add here, which is that you made it sound like the journal-based system we have today with sending journals around, or let's say at least pre-internet, sending journals around, articles around in journals and having them peer-reviewed. This wasn't invented so early. So Newton, in the centuries after Newton, this wasn't in place yet, but they wrote books and often they waited quite long to publish them, and distribution took a long time. So I completely not saying you disagree. Said that, but just want to make sure that
I'm not... completely disagree. They did exist. Newton wrote to the Royal Society with his ideas. So there's a proceedings. They debated the ideas. They yes, published.
There wasn't a system that they would meet once a year or something, and people would present their experiments on stage, like the frog leg, for example, or these things. And this is where they were shown that these things work, and they're still very different from the journals we have today. And wasn't there again, the case they were the that both Leibniz and Newton wrote their
correspondence, exchange, right?
No, they wrote their books, and I think one of them waited with publication for some reason much longer.
Newton did. Leibniz
less credit at the time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but these correspondences were recorded and published and collated into books. So. Yeah, they're proto journals.
I think
full form, but they were the start of this idea that they were sending letters between each other and beginning to.
I have a second question to maybe pull this, let's say this hypothesis or this idea into the current time. Do you think there's similar situations going on at the time where certain areas of science have this inherent intrinsic idea of or need for
secrecy?
Yeah, exactly. And that hindering that specific field way more than other areas.
I just wanted to say that what I'm thinking of, maybe you're thinking the same direction, I'm thinking of the classical miracle drug in certain fields. I think in quite frequently in biological breakthroughs, like some new system of the cell, there was apoptosis, microRNAs, and there was whatever, 1,000 other things. Each of them came with the promise of a miracle drug. Once we've understood this system, we can tweak all of biological systems and cure all sorts of diseases that these things are associated with, often cancer. And I was wondering the exact same thing, to what extent there was a bit of secrecy when things seemed promising financially, and if there was how many situations they were actually where people did kind of not publish some knowledge that would allow them to then be the first one to patent their drug or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for us, as if we're to draw anything from this idea, the question is the patent systems and commercial science, because it's all driven by secrecy and a bit kind of like what you said, Hannes, the companies are now proposing that they have the elixir for life and that they are going to sell it to you and they can't tell you what's inside it. I mean, patents do help this, but they actually now write patents in a very specific way to obscure the actual formulation of the drug that they want, but they cover a large space when they talk about it in order to obscure the research areas they're doing. So we're moving back to a much more alchemical sense of obscurity in the writing of what you've done in order to preserve the information that you've got.
A bold statement, I guess, but I wouldn't completely disagree, maybe, but there seems to be such a component. Yeah,
and there's definitely a trend, it feels like, right? But and it's hard to gauge how, if it's getting worse or better or something, but there's definitely a trend for commercialization of science in a sense that universities are actually encouraging and creating the structures for scientists to make companies, and that inherently gives them an incentive to
absolutely
keep more science, the meat of the whole thing, more secret.
But also this is exactly counter, the opposite of how science works or should work. It should not be secret, but open communication is at the core of it, the sharing of ideas and data. So I think in a way maybe the same struggle is occurring now as it was then, also probably not explicitly, but much more, with a lot more between the lines, maybe.
I mean, originally that's what patents were designed to be, so that they allowed a company to tell other people about what they'd done and legally secure exactly that they'd done it, so that no people knew about what they'd done and they could build on it. But the company owned what they'd done and they could then make money from that and they would continue to work. And patents have been the system has been gamed to now that there are lots and lots of clever patent lawyers trying to obscure what the company's done for added value. And it's just a question of regulators to get us back to a more to sort of maybe the more open view of the patents. Like I really appreciate reading 1960s to 1980s patents because they're very clear. They were like, this is a problem, we did this, and you just add salt. And they go, oh, thanks, that's what we do, tick. Whereas we read patents today and they're like, if having been angry about salts, maybe you should try all of these salts and maybe some of them may work, but we're not sure, but they will do if in under these certain conditions. And it's all very convoluted.
But it does feel like it might be the other way around. Like it feels like alchemy had like these super big picture questions, right? Like infinite wealth or infinite life or something. While nowadays those big picture questions, like let's say fusion technology or something, is actually one of the fields that had, or like CERN, like the colliders and stuff is like a multinational, multi-scientist projects, like the super big questions, while the smaller questions, let's say like specific drugs for certain conditions, are more secret in a way.
True. Okay, so to sum up, I think we'll go with the classic feather research needed ending. What do you take away from, you know, how do you look upon alchemy after this?
Do you want to start, Philip, or?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're doing the same thing I did to you. That's only fair. Fair enough. I don't know. I feel like there's so much more to explore and there's so much more... I have like, it's almost like separate realms of knowledge that I have, because like there's like really interesting characters like John Dee in this space that we haven't even touched upon. So yeah, if listeners are interested in like exploring this topic more, write in, because I feel like I'm just more excited about it. I feel like it's almost like, yeah, I need to know more to form a better opinion. It's like we opened this can of worms and now I'm just curious. So I don't know. I think it's just fascinating, like this mixture of folklore, the idea of what an alchemist is and what it was in reality. Super cool. I'm excited. Amazing topic, Chris.
I agree. Definitely. As someone who kind of studied chemistry, so I guess biochemistry covers some of chemistry, I had not learned about the history of chemistry at all. And I was super excited when I read some of these books later on. But alchemy wasn't really part of that, but just the way of natural philosophy, which then turned into the science of chemistry today. So I didn't really know about alchemy, like no details, to be honest. And this detail of secrecy and this need for secrecy, I was absolutely not aware of. And I'm very happy you told us about that, Chris. So I think from my side, I'm super excited. And I do think the transmutation from alchemy into the science of chemistry and the discoveries throughout the centuries, I think are super interesting. And I'm happy you brought it up, and I hope we can do this again.
I think there's more to speak about alchemy because I'm fascinated with it. I have always been, as a chemist, I find it interesting as it's sort of an antecedent, maybe not a direct descendant, but definitely like a crazy cousin of chemistry. I appreciate it. I'm also proud to say that we have achieved some of alchemy's goals. So scientists have turned lead into gold. It's been done. It's not worth your time. You should not build a giant. It is, I think it's like a CERN equivalent collider. About it?
Did chemists or did physicists do it?
Oh, wow. I think it was physicists. But there you go. So physicists jumped the gun on the alchemists. And now biologists will have to get on the elixir of life. So poor old chemists just sit there going, hey guys, come on.
This was ours.
This was ours. But yes. So with that, thank you for listening, and we'll join you in 2 weeks.